Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We have on with us once again our weekly Wednesday guest, Marian Jacobs, psychosocial therapist, and she is back to speak on many topics involving the damaging effects of incarcerated individuals subjected to inappropriate treatment and so many other things out in the communities or whatever. We always have something different coming from our psychosocial therapist, Marian Jacobs. So without further ado, we will welcome Marian Jacobs. Marian, are you on with us?
I'm here, Leona. Thanks for receiving me.
Welcome once again. So what are we going to be discussing today?
There is so much we can discuss. I am very far in the progress of my book about the ground structure of the prison system, and it gets more and more amazing how it really works beneath the surface. And it's like an adventure. So so that's going very well. And last week I've seen the documentary that I have participated in, and that documentary was about European women who are involved with incarcerated men in the United States. And it was a little bit exciting to see myself back on a big screen. But the documentary is very honest and very, how can I say that? It's not a sensational film. It's very serious and with dignity, and it's a very good film. So
Tell me, Marian, will it be out where the readers, the audience, and others can actually listen to it or watch it at some point in time?
No, well, in the beginning, not. In the beginning, it will be on Dutch television. It is with subtitles because one woman from France is participated, one woman from Belgium and me, and the French woman spoke English. So that's with Dutch subtitles. But what we say is in English, with English subtitles. And in the beginning, it will be only on European television, but later on it will be on film festivals and move on. And I think it's interesting to see it also in the United States because it's about your prison system.
Really?
And what is happening between women and the whole penpal industry, because it has a good part and it has a very dangerous part. So both of the sides of the penpal industry is enlightened, and that's, I think, good.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking maybe at some point in time it might be on YouTube. Who knows? But it's interesting to hear about these things. I was going to talk to you also. I know that you mentioned someone that you knew that you were very close to recently did a talk or some presentation on, was it solitary confinement or...
Yeah. That was my own daughter. She's 18 years old, and she had to prepare a essay and a presentation for her school. And she came to me, and she knows that I am very into the subject, and I am writing my thesis and my book about it. So she wanted to know more about solitary confinement. And she chose that subject because she noticed that a lot of children, but also their parents, do not really know much about solitary confinement and the differences between the United States, the Netherlands, and Norway. So yesterday she was nominated. So she finished her essay, and then a few kids were nominated, and she was one of them. With a prize, so she's very proud, and I'm proud too. And she had a very good presentation about this. And so, yeah, it's good that people who have nothing to do with the system are able to hear and get more knowledge about what is happening in our country, your country, and other countries around this subject.
I can imagine you being proud of her, because a lot of young people... You know, when I was traveling years ago, I learned, so I was young then, I was in my late 40s, early 50s, but I remember coming back to the United States and telling a lot of young people, they need to, at the time it was safe to, they need to travel to get to know other cultures, get to know other about other countries. And that's the same with the penal system. You know, there's a lot of students that go to college that want to do volunteer work with, you know, organizations like Mayan and other organizations out there to actually get their internships, to learn, to get the experience of the types of incarcerated individuals, to learn so much. And when young people like your daughter and others out there that are trying to understand the system and comparisons between the countries when it comes to these type of situations, it is something to be proud of. It really is. I know yeah. in this country, a lot of young people in this country, they have, it's like they don't leave their little box. And I remember being born and raised on Cape Cod in Massachusetts, going over the bridge to another town. It was like going to another country until I traveled and I realized this country is just like a pebble in the sand. So seeing young people venturing out there and getting experience and knowledge about, you know, all these different situations is something to really be proud of.
Yes, I am. And I think it's good for herself, too, that she becomes more aware of what's going on in the world. And yeah, and that the world is complicated, especially nowadays, you know. And they have to start their life in this complicated world. I also discovered that for myself when I, you know, during my whole research on the United States prison system. And I think the biggest problem what you have in your country is that amendments are suspended, like the 8th Amendment, 6th Amendment, 14th Amendment. There are some gaps in these amendments which make that these amendments are, in a way, suspended. I think if politicians, and I don't care whether they are on the right wing or the left wing, but if politicians would really implement these amendments and the law as it should be, then there would be no mass incarceration. I think that's I think what the people should do is hold politicians accountable for the fact that they do not implement the law as it should be.
You arose my curiosity because you seem to have a lot of knowledge about the amendments. So about a month ago, I printed out the amendments from Amendment 1 to Amendment 10, and I'm now starting to learn a little bit about it. Like I hear a lot of times I'll hear about, you know, amending the someone doesn't want to, what do you call it, freedom of speech. They don't want to speak or something like that. So that would be like I don't want to exercise my Fifth Amendment or my Sixth Amendment or whatever. And I have learned, I have it right in front of me. I haven't learned it by heart yet, but I at least can look at it and I can tell what the different amendments are. And that's another thing I noticed that you're very familiar with are the amendments. So in your book, do you mention the amendments as well?
Yeah, I don't mention them at all. I only mention the amendments that are that are directly connected to the prison system because it's about the system. Yes, I have to because they are the basis of the suspension of them are, in fact, the foundation of mass incarceration. So, yes, it's in fact, the core of my book. And there are these gaps, and they are very – and those – especially when you look at the 13th Amendment and the 14th Amendment, the 14th Amendment makes it possible for corporal power to grow and to maintain prisons as a business, as a million-dollar business. And the 13th Amendment has this exception, which say that if somebody is convicted of a crime, then the 13th Amendment will no longer be applied to him. It's, you know, abolishment of slavery, except for those who are convicted of a crime. So this exception, in fact, abolishes the 13th Amendment. So, and those are these little gaps that makes it possible to maintain mass incarceration by law. And I think What people should become aware of that is that mass incarceration is not an accident. It's a very conscious choice to do this. And so the change can also be made very consciously, but it also can be made. And that's by, I think, by doing, by holding politicians accountable of the fact that they don't do their work. You know, amendments are, in fact, values. You have rules and norms, and those are the laws. But amendments are, in fact, values, and amendments are expressions of democracy, because about amendments, one can have discussions, and discussing amendments means democracy. It's always moving, you know. If we would not have amendments and only laws, we would have a totalitarian regime. But amendments have to be discussed, and that's not what's happening. They are manipulated, and that's something else than discussion. And in that, it's going wrong, very wrong, so wrong that you have 2.3 million people incarcerated and all their families. It's not only the people in the prison, but all the people around the incarcerated individuals.
Exactly.
So it's a very smart political game, and it's not happening to the people. The people let it happen. That's a choice too. A lot of people, you know, they say, oh, it's bad and it should change. But in the meanwhile, nothing changes, because it doesn't change by itself. It changes when people in communities say, stop, we have had enough of it. It has to be stopped. And we are going to stop it by holding politicians accountable.
Exactly.
But nobody holds them accountable. People talk about it, but they don't do, you know, they don't do anything.
And that's where a lot of frustration, because there are two politicians or three politicians that I know of that actually visit, you know, with prisoners sporadically. But even they themselves said they wish they could get more of the legislative members to start visiting. I think the prisons need to be randomly visited occasionally, maybe every few months, to meet with the prisoners and to give them that hope that, you know, somebody is out there trying to help. Someone's trying to show some kind of help to them. And there's it was on television the other day. There is an actor. He's from Boston originally. His name is Mark Wahlberg. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's a well-known actor. But he is putting on a movie. He's going to be in a movie, and the name of the movie is Father Stu, STU. And Mark Wahlberg was talking about, and I really would love to see this, because he was talking about how, I guess, he changed from bad to actually becoming a priest or a pastor or whatever. But he was talking about prisoners and how people do not realize that prisoners can change, and they do change. And so when I was listening to him talking about this, and he was really sincere, he is very sincere about it. And I just think it's people like him that make a big difference, and that can make a big difference, and that is right now currently trying to make a difference. And he's saying he's hoping by this movie that people are going to start looking in a different light around the prisoners, those incarcerated. I thought it was very interesting. Mark Wahlberg,
okay.
W-A-H-L-B-E-R-G apostrophe S. But I never really watched him. I've seen him, and he looks like a very humble person. But he seems to be one that is let people know people do change. People do change, and that's why
I think people, of course, people can change if they are willing to change, and if they have the chance to change, they can change. But first of all, I think it starts, besides the whole story that I said about politicians, it also starts with taking responsibility. And I am not only talking about juridical responsibility, but also moral responsibility, which makes us human. That has to do with involvement, that has to do with dignity, respect, and all that. And that's, you know, right now, I don't believe that there are people, parties or groups who. I wonder who is responsible for the incarcerated people. I don't know.
And
you know, because everybody be a hot, yeah.
Yeah, you just mentioned, well, too, the corporations, people making money off of it. So it's not only, you know, who's putting them in, who's keeping them in. It's you know, why a lot of them are still in when they shouldn't be in. And it's the corporations.
I think what a big problem is there are too many procedures and too many rules. The whole system is filled with so many rules that there is no room anymore, space anymore, for individuals to think for themselves. And that's what I saw in that whole situation with George Floyd. This police officer who had the knee on the neck of George Floyd, he was following the rules, he was following the procedure, and he had not learned to think for himself and to decide, hey, this is not good, what I'm doing. No, he was only following the rules, and that can lead to death if you don't have space or the possibility to think for yourself what is good or what's not good, and you are only following procedures, rules and laws and all that. Then you get a system like this, because then you cannot be a human anymore. I mean, we know that the staff in it. Yeah.
We get these robocalls a lot, and that's what it was. These robocalls are driving me crazy, and the government, speaking of government, they need to do something about these things.
Yeah, please. That has been going on for years, I believe. I don't know
and
what
they,
it is.
They keep saying they're going to get it under control. They're going to do so much, but they haven't. And I should have, well, some of these phones cannot be muted, so that had to ring. But as you were saying.
So what I was saying is, that what I miss in the prison system is personal responsibility. Nobody takes responsibility, you know. That's why you have all these, you know, people are neglected in the prison system, the bad food. I read about, you know, there was a poop of mice in bread in one of the prisons. I don't know. I read it last week. It was in a women's prison. And the people and the staff in the kitchen, they wanted other bread, but no, they could not get other bread. Just take the poop away and then serve the bread anyway. You know, it's true neglect of the individuals in the incarcerated individual. And why do we have neglect of the people? Because there is no responsibility. And how can we teach incarcerated people responsibility if we do not set an example by acting responsible by ourselves towards them?
Exactly. You know, when you think about it, you mentioned George Floyd and that the police with their policies are hard anyway. But when you add to those policies that are already complicated and overly expressed, you add all the other problems that are in this country to it. You have not only the policies that they have to follow, but you also have the anger, the frustration that many go through, I'm sure, because of the crime rates and everything. But they are also part of the crime rates by what they do, the law enforcement. But then you also have the racism. And I think this is a major role in a lot of these, even I can't say that the police, they're not all bad, but I can't say that they're doing the right thing by following procedure, because they know themselves what the procedures are. But when they kind of overly extend those procedures to fit their own satisfaction, you know, their own desires to harm somebody, to harm somebody severely, that's overstepping boundaries. I don't think anybody that does that should be in law enforcement. They should not be correctional officers. They should not be prison officials. They should be fired on the spot, overstep. And they end up...
Yeah, and that's happening all the time, because the more policy, the more rules, the more procedures, the more crossing these lines of them. Because it's it's and then you get a kind of lawlessness. I don't know if that's the right word, but then because that's what you see in the prison system. You see a contradiction. You see a counterpart. On the one hand, you see too much regulation, and on the other hand, you see this violence, which has no regulation at all. So you see a contradiction in the prison system.
Exactly.
It's out of balance, because you know if I have to follow so many rules, then I can cross so many lines too. And that's the whole problem.
And the thing is, if it works in your country and other countries, the humanitarian, you know, what do you call it, role model. This is what we should be following, and it doesn't happen here. And I wanted to ask you another thing, Mariam. When it comes to people incarcerated, there's a high suicidal rate in this country. And I wonder sometimes, I know there's a lot of people who they can't be double selves for whatever, whether it be childhood trauma or whether it be other reasons, they can't be double selves. And I know there are so many empty cells around the country that they can be spreading these prisoners out so they're not, especially those who are serving life sentences. What kind of damage can that cause somebody? I know a lot of them have gotten, they have actually gotten a lot of disciplinary reports for refusing to double cell. And this is a major issue, because I don't think someone that has been traumatized as children or adolescents, whether it be male or female, I cannot understand why they would have to be forced to double cell. Many of them don't even want to be transferred from where they are because they're afraid of losing their double cell status. And I think that this is very stressful and can escalate the already psychological issues that they're having to deal with. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's another expression of the fact that incarcerated people are not considered human beings. You look at this as from a human standpoint, but from the system, they don't see, you know, they don't look from a human standpoint. You know, they see incarcerated people as bodies. If they would look at it at the same way as you do, there would not be mass incarceration. There are so many issues in these people already, and this system, I mean, it's like, you know, it's not for nothing that they call it a warehouse. It's like bio industry, you know, what we do with cows and cattle. It's the human factor is not present in there. So they don't care whether somebody has trauma and cannot be double celled. They don't care. You have to do what you're told to do. It's the same with solitary confinement, you know. Solitary confinement longer than 15 days starts being harming the brain and the body and the psyche. And people are, you know, in solitary confinement for months or years. And one of the things that happen when somebody is too long in solitary confinement is that he gets aggressive. But aggressive is punished with, an extension of solitary confinement. So you see the cycle. That's the whole cycle. And you are a lot of these cycles.
I think a lot of times that's why they do it. They keep them in solitary to make them aggressive. Because there are a lot of, you know, I've been advocating for 25 years, and I've seen so many people, which I never, like everyone else in the communities, I at one time thought all prisoners were hardcore criminals. But the thing that I've learned is this: there are a lot of good prisoners. There are a lot of good incarcerated men and women in behind those walls, and they just they went in gentle, and this is the way they try to be. But it seems like if they're targeted or if they're trying to make them hard, you know, they're trying to make them hard and aggressive so they can say, you know, continue to say, you know, we need to be harsh on crime. But I was doing some research the other day, and I came across the thing about the riots that took place in Massachusetts, but also other states. But one of the things, when they were talking about the riot, there were two prisoners that said that they, because they are double-celled, they were saying how they were sweaty. They were so sweaty. And when the riot broke out, they made them all, they locked them all in, even those that weren't involved, and they would not let them take showers. And that made them even, you know, more upset. And not long after that, there was another riot, but it wasn't in Massachusetts. It was in another state. But these are things that happen. These people are double celled, kept in their cell on restricted blocks or solitary or whatever. And even if they're not on solitary or restrictive, they're in a double cell with somebody else. And not everybody is clean. You're going to be in a cell, a small, tiny cell with another inmate serving long sentences, life without or 50 years or whatever it is, and then to be denied showers. If you can't have a shower in every few days and you're stuck in a cell with a dirty person, I would also be, and I noticed this happens a lot in prisons where there's double cell. Although there have been loved ones of incarcerated individuals that said their loved one enjoys being double cell. So maybe they want the companionship or whatever, I don't know. But there's a lot of people incarcerated that cannot be double self. They refuse to be double self.
Yeah, but then they are, you know, if they don't want to be double self, they are just simply lucky if they are not, and they have bad luck if they are, because the human aspect is out of the system. It doesn't matter to the system what people want. People's wishes are not honored because they are not considered not to be human.
Which goes back to the lack of treatment and appropriate rehabilitation, because
look, if there would be true rehabilitation, I'm not talking about these nonsense programs, but if there would be real rehabilitation, if there would be do you have to pick up the phone?
Go ahead. No, this is a call. Go ahead. We're on a radio show. No one should be calling, and this is a out of country call, so go right ahead.
And if I'm lost.
I know.
If rehabilitation, true rehabilitation, what I call deeper justice, if that would be applied, then there would be no mass incarceration. And what we said, you know, when the human aspect would be honored, respected, there also would be no mass incarceration. You know, for the corporal power and for the system, they are simply locking up living bodies they can earn a lot of money from. And that's, you know, that's the whole problem. So it doesn't matter if somebody says, I don't want to be double-celled or I do want to be double-celled, because choices or wishes are not important. And that's the whole problem.
And that's why we have such a failure in our American prisons, the penal system, because they're treated like animals. They're denied, so many of them are denied opportunities to participate in programs and work programs and educational. You know, a lot of them, you know, right now there was a senator, I believe it's a senator, a state representative. His name is Michael Day. And he just challenged the DOC, Department of Corrections, over the 22 to 24-hour confinements to the prison cells, and they defend it. They say that they're not. It's not 22 hours. It's over 20, but under 22. So big deal. It's 20. What is it? 20. I think it's 21 and a half hours. So they kind of like, when they get challenged, they kind of like just bring it right to the limit, so that they're not being totally in violation. And that's what this politician was saying, that they were in violation because they're not supposed to keep them in 22 to 24 hours. So they make it 21 and a half hours.
Yeah. That's the game. That's the political game. And if you see these political games, then you see why you have mass incarceration, why it's possible to do this. Because
exactly.
Those are it's these little games they play. And in that way, by playing these political games, they even can have mass incarceration on a legal way, because it's legal. It's insane, but it's legal.
It's the
and
same.
We look from human eyes, so we cannot understand it. Our hearts cannot understand that it's legal to torture people within the law, but it's happening, and so it's possible. That's what I researched on.
Exactly.
That's why I wanted to understand, you know, because we have all these examples of what is happening. And, you know, a lot of people know what's happening. There is a lot of social media. There are prisoners who have, how do you say that, who have these cell phones, and they make little videos and they put them on social media so we can look inside the prisons. We know what's happening. But still, it's legal, and that's why it's happening. And I think it starts with the fact, you know, what we started the show with, it starts with the fact that amendments are suspended. And suspending of law and suspending of amendments is, in fact, only happens when there is a state of war. Then the legal order is suspended. But in your country, there is no war, and still amendments are suspended. So it's like your country is in war with itself. And that's strange. That's weird. That's insane. But it is happening. Because if the Eighth Amendment would be applied on the right way, if you have the Sixth Amendment, if that would be applied on the right way, there would be no plea bargain. If the Eighth Amendment is applied on the right way, there would be no such crazy long sentences for little crimes, you see, and there would be dignity, there would be rehabilitation. It's all in the Eighth Amendment, but it's not happening. So what's going wrong? Why do we have these amendments, and why do you have mass incarceration? That is a contradiction, and it has only one answer. Amendments are suspended, so your country is in war with itself. And it's the same with racism. You know, you named racism, and I think we have talked about it before. Racism is a tool for politics to keep people divided. For as long as people fight each other in communities, in the streets, and there is this hierarchy, they don't unite and they don't protest. So racism, I always say racism is a problem for the people in communities, but it's a very useful tool for politicians to keep all structures going and to keep mass incarceration as a million-dollar industry intact. And people have to become aware of that. It's not simply racism. It has racism really has a very deep level, deep layer, which lies underneath what you see. Politicians would really have a problem if everybody would treat each other equal. Then politics gets a problem. They want you to fight. They want you to be divided. Because if you are divided, you won't protest, because you won't unite. The real power is in the people, but the people fight each other. And so everything can maintain.
And the sad thing about it, right now we have a president that's really heavily involved in what's happening over in Ukraine, and I know that the Netherlands is not far at all from it either. But this ongoing, you know, we need to back away a little bit. I mean, I know that the United States is kind of like the control of all countries or whatever, but sometimes I feel as though we need to stop focusing more on improving this country that we live in so we can be the role models, so that we can be the role models for other countries, not the other countries being the role model for us. And right now, when it comes to the penal system, all other countries are really the role model, because there's no other country in the entire world, and I looked it up, there's no country in the entire world that has mass incarceration as the United States. So if the United States government feels the only way to look good to the world is to incarcerate people so that they can be put away and nobody knows about them, that's not the way. That's not even rational. And what makes it so difficult is that we have a community out there, we have people out there that think that prisoners are animals, just like the government has made them feel, because the media continuously portrays them as that. The media will sensationalize on all these things. The producers, movie producers, they make movies about it. You know, we have a president that acts like everything's okay because we got them all caged in the prisons, in cattle, like cattle. And everything you're talking about right now, you see it from abroad. And yet the people in our own country cannot fathom that that this country is wrong in the way that they incarcerate individuals. I interviewed Brian Winters, who is the founder of an American union. And he said that they don't focus on parties, Republican or Democrat. What they focus on are the policies, as you mentioned earlier. They focus on the policies and are they doing the right thing. They're focusing on taking all these people that are incarcerated because of marijuana and releasing them. Because now marijuana has been legalized in this country. And yet there's still people serving outrageous amounts of time in prison over marijuana. We have first-time offenders who have never been in trouble before, serving life and life without parole for a first-time mistake. And then we have a lot of wrongfully convicted. You know, these are things that our government needs to look at, but they don't. They don't want to be bothered. They want their paycheck. They want their fame. They want to be noticed and their notoriety and everything else. But when it comes to actually doing something positive in the country other than satisfying some of their constituents, they don't do it. A lot of them, I bet there are a lot that have investments in the prison, just like with these corporations that you speak of.
Yeah, I think when you look in general, what I see in your country, you know, Biden is now focused on Ukraine and on you know, he would
too
like
much.
Us, yeah, far too much. He would like Europe to become in war, to get in war with Russia. We are not going to do that. But, you know, you also had the Iraq war, the Afghanistan war. You had so many wars. You had, Vietnam. You had Cuba. You had so many countries. You are, you know, the United States is a warlike country. You know, it likes to bully other countries. It has been the biggest power in the world. Now it's changing. I believe that we are now in a time of change of world order because China is rising, Russia is strong. People become more aware of what the United States is doing. And what I find pitiful for the citizens of the United States is that politicians are always looking on the other side of the ocean and they neglect their own country. You know,
exactly.
The United States becomes a festering wound from the inside out. I mean, in the beginning, there was this talking about all these projects like the infrastructure would be rebuilt and other things, but it's not happening. And that's a problem. And your country should, you know, turn around and look at itself instead of looking at other countries. Because you don't need to be an example for other countries because other countries decide for themselves what they want. Even countries who are not a democracy, if they don't want to be a democracy, it's their right to make that choice. Because as we see in the United States, the United States calls itself a democracy, but it's not because it suspends its own amendments. That's not democracy. It's only a democracy for the wealthy people, people with a lot of money and corporal power. But it's an autocracy for regular people. It's not a democracy for regular people. If you look at all the homeless people, you have these food stamps. Homeless people, mass incarceration, a lot of people who are not able to reach decent health care. You have so many huge problems in your own country and you all are abandoned by your own politicians and it doesn't matter whether it's the right wing or the left wing because you do not really have a left wing. It's all right. When the Democrats have moved to the middle or more to the right and Republicans are more to ultra-right, look at, you know, you get more and more conservative. Look at what's happened in Texas. This woman has gotten a sentence. She's sentenced for murder because of abortion. I mean, that's like in the Middle Ages, you know. I would never be able to do an abortion myself, So I'm not talking about whether I am in support of or against abortion, but I am in support of free will. And in Texas, even when a woman is raped or is a victim of how do you say that? A rape by their own family member, how do you say that?
Incest,
then still she's not allowed to have an abortion. I mean, come on, in the 60s you all fought for the freedom for women rights, and now it's all broken, you know, they are breaking it down again.
I don't think anyone has the right to make anyone, I mean, that's between the individuals and God. You know, the way I look at it is we have to face our maker. We all do, even those who are being judgmental and making decisions for these women. They should not have the right, and I don't know who in government is allowing them to do that. I mean,
regulations. It's more, you know, your country is becoming like a police state, because even with these, when we look at these abortion law in Texas, if somebody knows another person who is involved in abortion, he has the obligation to go to the police and betray that person. Otherwise, he gets a ticket. So you have to police your neighbors and other people. What kind of country is that? It scares the hell out of me. So it's becoming so conservative. And if you look at these things, what will happen to the people who are incarcerated? That only can become worse.
There's no treatment. There's no appropriate treatment. And that's why a lot of these COs, these lieutenants that are now out of the system are talking about what went on in the system. You know, they're writing books on it. But I wish they would wait. I wish they wouldn't wait until they leave the penal system, leave their jobs to start exposing their peers, exposing the damage, what they're doing to these incarcerated people. I wish they would do it while they're still inside and get their other peers to join forces with them and exposing them. Because right now, too many people are committing suicide. Too many people are dying unnecessarily because either they're being destroyed by their overseers or they can't deal with, they can't cope with the way they're being treated, the way they're being confined. And solitary confinement and restrictive housing, that's another thing. There's no difference between the two except name and name only. But in order to justify what they're doing by keeping people in solitary, and they know that they haven't done anything to be in solitary, they call it restrictive housing. And a lot of them haven't even done anything to be in restrictive housing. But these are their excuses. They give different names for different policies or whatever that comes up. They always seem to find a way to justify the evil that they're doing. And our government leaders who are trying to see criminal justice reform, they need to start looking further into this. And deeper into it. They need to start doing random visits to the prisons, random visits every few months to the prisons, meet with these prisoners, learn about what's going on inside. But a lot of them just make their phone calls, they get lied to, and that's it. That's not doing
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. And what you say, you know, they have to look deeper into it. And they also have to, you know, to become aware of the way laws are implemented and the way amendments are suspended. They have to look at that, because, you know, now there's a talk about prison reform and all that, and it's great, it's necessary, but it's not enough. It's really not enough, because a lot of prison reform is in itself. You have, you know, if you really want prison reform, they really have to start to look at what's happening beyond the surface, what's happening there, what are we doing with our own citizens. And they have to start by seeing them as citizens and not as bodies, locked up bodies.
And that's what they look at.
Yeah, they take away the rights of incarcerated people, and the prison rights are to laugh about. It's nothing. Prison's rights... there are so many large procedures that prisoners have to go through, or they are, you know, if they have to fill in complaints, they are thrown in solitary confinement just to keep them away from doing that. And if prisoners talk, they have to be careful that there's no retaliation, and that's also sick. It's such a rotten system. I mean, the fact that you have this whole big organization that fights for the innocent in prison. You need such an organization because there are so many innocent people in prison. And even if they are proven to be innocent, then it still takes sometimes many years to get out anyway.
You know, when Barry Scheck first came about, Barry Scheck was the founder of the Innocence Project. When he he was a blessing. I mean, I wish that there were more Barry Schecks out there. And out of that came, I believe it was the Cardoza Project, which was also for wrongfully convicted or, you know, helping the wrongfully convicted. But there needs to be more oversight, as they say. And unless we have legislative members that do random visits to the prison and find out what's really going on, because they're hearing bits and pieces. I know a few, two or three prison officials I can actually guarantee when they talk to them that those are the ones they're talking to, because those three lie like anyone. And unfortunately, they're the prison officials that usually end up talking with the politicians when they call over there about any situation involving the incarcerated individuals. But they need to start making these random visits. They really need to start doing more than they're doing. And they would be saving lives, because by them not visiting periodically, not talking to
these people. I also think that, you know, what we said before is when you look at, you know, nationwide, the United States should start taking care of its own people. And that means also access to health care, access to mental health care, access to good care for people who have addictions, treatment for trauma, treatment for disorders and all that. They should invest in that.
And Joe Biden,
because I think if you deconstruct the 2.3 million incarcerated people and you look who is really the worst of the worst, that's only a very small number. That's a very small number. And maybe for those people, yes, they need to be incarcerated and maybe they need even life sentences. But the majority needs treatment and a human treatment, but also, you know, psychological treatment and healthcare and all that. And that's what's lacking.
And Joe Biden, when he was running for the presidency, he was making promises that he was going to, with this criminal justice reform and all this. A lot of prisoners are saying he and Kamala Harris were contributors to the problem in the first place in the penal system. Now they said that they were going to, you know, they were going to work towards criminal justice reform, but yet look at where they are. You know, the economy is in bad shape. The criminal justice system is nowhere further than it was before. And the gas prices have gone way up, and people are worrying about losing their houses. Everything that's happening right now is subsequent to promises that were made that are not being kept, because the focus now has gone over to other countries.
Yeah, I think he made a lot of promises because it looked good for the elections. What I think is that people should start to become more rational and try to get more information about what is really going on. You know, I watch a lot of lectures on YouTube to learn about what is going on. Not to judge people, but just simply look at what is happening. It's the same as with the war in Ukraine. Everybody is against Russia. And they are in support of Ukraine, but I wanted to know what was happening, the background, the history, what led to, you know, the same as what led to the crime. Now I apply to what led to this war, and that's a whole different story.
These two countries were willing to talk. They were willing to try to negotiate. But you know what? Sometimes when two countries are talking about a willingness to negotiate, they don't need a third country to continuously push and push and push and end up finally saying the heck with it. We're not going to negotiate at all. And that's what's happening. And those countries that want to remain neutral are almost being bullied into making a decision as to who they're going to side with. And that's the worst thing that they can do, is to try to make them make decisions on siding when they want to stay neutral, stay out of it. They don't want to be interfering. And yet they're being talked about now because they don't want to side with the U.S. or side with whoever else is trying to. You know, people make their own decisions whether they want to stay neutral. We have too many people judging prisoners because they can't stay neutral between the victims and the offenders. If they had, then maybe restorative justice would work quicker. But they don't want to stay neutral. They feel like they're going to side with somebody. They don't even know the other party, but they're going to hate the other party because this party, and let's face it, Ukraine's president was an actor, a celebrity.
He knows how to present himself on camera. But, you know, what Russia wants is, in fact, the same. It was an interesting comparison. Russia simply wants a neutral border around, you know, of countries. And it was promised to Russia. But the West broke the promise multiple times. That was, I believe, in 2008, 2014, a couple of times. And the comparison is made when Cuba wanted missile weapons at the border and was collaborating with Russia because they both were communists. The United States didn't want it. They said, never, never, ever do we want a communist on our border. Well, Putin says the same. Why is it different when Putin wants it? I don't like Putin, but I can understand that he wants neutral countries around him because it's promised to them. And we want the same. We want exactly the same. So what's the difference? And I'm not taking a side. I'm against the war, but I'm against every war. But
That's it.
I think people should, you know, inform themselves before they start pointing at others.
I'm not a judgmental person. I mean, I have to know all the facts, and that's why we have mass incarceration, because the public does not know all the facts to what led to people being incarcerated. They don't know all the facts, but yet they just continue to go along with whoever is throwing them behind those prison walls, and they're just digging. And you know, it's terrible that people get so involved in stuff they don't even know about. Like you mentioned, deeper justice. Dig deeper into the situation. Find out the cause, the reason behind it. And that's what we are missing in this country. That's what we are missing.
It's missing in your country, but it's also, you know, it shocks me also that it's in the world when I look at the war. I think the way people respond to it shocks me maybe more than what's going on. Because this says something, when you look at social media and all that, then, like here in the Netherlands, there is even a difference between refugees from Syria or refugees from Ukraine. You know, the ones from Ukraine, they get help from all sides. But the ones in Syria are also refugees. They also have a hard time. It's measuring with two different standards, and that doesn't feel good for me.
Yeah. You know what was ironic, too? I noticed that when they removed the troops, when they removed the troops from Afghan, and right away, as soon as Biden got in, they removed the troops from Afghanistan. And then suddenly, all of a sudden, coincidentally, all this stuff in Ukraine and Russia and the troops are getting sent over there. It was almost as though somebody knew that they were going to need those troops for another period of time, an upcoming event. I mean, this is just what it seemed to me, because it all happened almost simultaneously, not long after they were removed. But these are some of the things that go on in the country and around the world, and also in our incarcerated, in our penal system. And it's sad because something needs to be done about this mass incarceration. This is so it's terrible, because we're the only country in the world that has it, and there are so many people, and like you say, loved ones of those incarcerated, family, friends, advocates, all trying to reduce this prison system. because we have 2.3 and they're still going in. They're still, and now you heard about the event that happened in New York. So we have internal terrorism really going on in our own country right now. So mm-hmm. we need to have a government that's going to focus on reducing the incarceration and also focusing on the division in this country, focusing on racism, focusing on mass incarceration, you know, trying to get things right. Marion, we have 4.5 minutes, so I'd like you to give the audience all your information. Anything you want to say to them, please do.
I will give my information. My website is www.deeperjustice.com. I get another website with my own name, but I will say that later when it's ready. I am on Facebook, and I always also have a Facebook page, Deeper Justice. I am on LinkedIn with my own name and on Instagram. And my email is MarionJacob67@gmail.com.
Okay. As far as the book, again, it should be coming out when?
I don't know exactly yet. I will graduate, I think, at the end of this month. And then I will transform my thesis into a book, and then it will be published. But I don't have the exact date because I want to do it with focus. I don't want to do it in a rush.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing. I'm so anxious for the book to come out, and I know there's so many others out there waiting, because you not only wrote the book to bring awareness, but you wrote the book so that people can understand as well the difference between people in general. And you also wrote the book out of knowledge and experience yourself, because you have been involved in the penal system in both the Netherlands and in the United States. You have seen it. You have worked with people that have been in. You have done your research. You have so much information to share with the public, and I'm looking forward to it myself. So I thank you very much for coming on. And I hope the audience will look Marion up in whatever ways you can help, volunteer or to do some research for her, whatever the case may be, or just look forward to her book coming out, because I know that all of you are going to benefit from it. Marion, and I want to thank you once again. You're always, always, always so welcome to come on this show.
And thank you for having me.
And please congratulate your daughter on the work that she did as far as the presentation on the solitary confinement, because that is one of the most important needs that we need to work on, is to eliminate, abolish solitary confinement. And as you say, a lot of people have been in solitary for longer than they're supposed to be. Many have been in for 30. I just read the other day, one has been in for over 30-something years in solitary confinement.
That's crazy. It's insane.
You know, I can't imagine anyone surviving to be incarcerated and in solitary all those years. But
no, me neither.
Again, I'm hoping that the legislative members will start doing some random visits to the prisons and find out everything about what's going on in the prison, everything. Many are being denied, deprived. So once again, Marion, last minute words.
I hope that everybody is going to think about everything we have talked about.
And again, I want to thank you. So we are going to be closing. We will be ending this episode, and we look forward to hopefully Marion being on next Wednesday, 1 o'clock p.m. to 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And again, I welcome all of you to come back on. If you ever want to call in, ask questions, give feedback, provide, do some brainstorming, 657-383-1630. You're welcome to call in. Thank you so much, and I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you, Marion.
Thank you, too.